Rusty, Tanner, and Andy tried to be vigilant, but their vigilance was compromised by the excitement of nearing home. Consequently, they almost ran into an armed band of riders. Just in time, they dropped into a dry creek bed and dismounted to avoid being seen.
Soldiers?
No. They ain't wearing uniforms.
State police. They got the look of high authority and meanness. Maybe they're hunting for you, Rusty.
I wouldn't think so. The Oldhams don't know but what I'm still at the Monahans. But that bunch is sure on the hunt for somebody.
I'd hate to be the one they're after. They look serious enough to shoot him on sight.
Then claim he tried to get away.
The three cautiously made their way to the Tom Blessing place. No one was working in the fields. The only sign of life Rusty saw was a thin rise of smoke from the cabin's chimney. Tom Blessing's wife came to the edge of the dog run and held her hand over her eyes. When Rusty hesitated 50 yards out, she waved.
It's all right! Come on in!
What do you think?
I'm thinking I'm awful hungry.
That settles it.
The three dismounted and brought their horses to the house.
Kind of spooked us a little not seeing Tom or Shanty or anybody.
They're all over at Shanty's place. Our boys, too. They're putting up a new cabin for them.
Taking a chance, aren't they? Some of the hotheads around here will burn it down like before.
Not likely. Tom and our boys paid a visit to Fowler Gaskin, and everybody else they thought might have such notions. Put the fear of God into them. Ain't heard a word out of Fowler since. Nor anybody else.
What about Jeremiah Brackett and his son Farley?
Farley's got himself in real bad trouble. He's run the law ragged trying to catch him, so they've been camping on his daddy's doorstep. The old man's got too much grief on his plate to bedevil Shanty or anybody else.
We'll ride on over to Shanty's then. I need to talk to Tom.
Keep a sharp eye out for the Oldhams and their state police. They came back mighty sore over not being able to arrest you. Tom says Buddy's gone a little crazy.
He always did seem three aces shy of a full deck. I'll watch out for him.
Shanty's crop of corn had been cut and set up in shocks across the field. His dog came trotting out to meet the visitors. Hearing him bark, Shanty put aside an axe with which he'd been trimming a log. He stared a moment until he was sure, then hobbled toward Rusty. Beyond him, Rusty could see that the cabin walls were almost finished.
Mr. Rusty, welcome home. And to you, Mr. Tanner. Andy?
It's good to see you. You've been getting along all right?
Fine as frog hair. I wished you'd look at the cabin the Blessings are helping me build. It'll be bigger than the old one was.
I'm glad, Shanty.
It'll feel good to stay at my own place and take care of my own land. Just me and my old dog. Hope it don't rain before we get done.
Don't see a cloud in the sky.
Oh, hush, old Ruff. You looked as much dead as alive last time we seen you.
I've healed up pretty good. Don't have a lot of strength in that shoulder, but it'll get better.
Them Oldhams don't mean to just wound you in the shoulder next time. They'll aim for your heart.
Tom Blessing strode out to greet Rusty and the others. He still had a crushing handshake.
Been expecting you. Even though I hoped you wouldn't come. Things have turned off real mean round here.
I thought they already were.
They've got worse. The Oldhams and a bunch of state police made a wild sashay after Farley Brackett. He shot one of them dead and wounded two more before he got away.
I don't suppose Buddy or Clyde were hit.
No such luck. Now there's hell to pay. Governor Davis is threatening martial law.
Well, maybe they're too busy to be worrying about me.
The Oldhams ain't forgot about you. They've added some new charges. Fleeing to avoid prosecution, refusal to submit to arrest, also attempted murder. They claim you fired on Clyde up at the Monahan place.
That was me, not Rusty.
Doesn't matter. They say it was Rusty, and the carpetbagger judge we've got will take their word for it. He's hell on any old rebel that gets brought before his bench.
I've thought some about giving myself up. Not to the Oldhams, but to the court.
You'd better get over that notion. The judge would turn you over to the Oldhams anyway. Remember what they did to you last time.
What can I do?
Smart thing would be to quit this part of the country and not show yourself again till the government changes. It will, when all the old Texans finally get a chance to vote.
But Clyde Oldham stole my farm. I want it back.
Be patient. The land ain't going anywhere.
The walls for Shanty's cabin were finished a little after sundown. Tom Blessing stepped back to gaze on the work, smiling in satisfaction.
Me and the boys got all our chores to see to before dark. We'll start on the roof in the morning.
I'm much obliged to all of you. I ain't got no money, but I got something better. I got friends.
Blessing nodded his head, and his family rode back to their house.
I'm afraid you've still got some enemies, too.
Been a long time since they bothered me. Mr. Tom and his boys put the Indian sign on them. And lately, the state police been chasing them around some, too. They ain't had no time to mess with old Shanty. You all are gonna stay the night here, ain't you?
I'm anxious to take a look at my own place.
You'll be safer staying. Them police don't mess around here. But the Oldhams will expect you to show up at your farm sooner or later.
We'll impose on your hospitality then. But it'd be a good idea if we sleep a little ways out yonder, just in case.
That old dog of mine will warn you if anybody comes snooping around. He don't let nothing bigger than a rabbit come close without he raises a ruckus.
He's a good one, all right.
I hope y'all like catfish. I caught me a big one down in that deep hole.
Sounds like a feast to me.
Yep, but it'll be nothing compared to the joy of sleeping in my old house again.
But it's got no roof yet.
Don't matter. It's got walls, so I'll be sleeping indoors.
They were up and on their way long before daylight. Rusty knew where the Oldhams had posted guards in the timber along the river to watch his farm when they had been looking for him before. He thought he might find some of them there, but a careful search turned up no one.
If it was a good place for them to watch from, I reckon it'll do for us. Let's wait here a spell and see if there's any sign of life.
He watched the chimney in particular. If anyone was staying in the cabin, there should soon be smoke, but none appeared. As the sun came up and spilled strong morning light across the farm, he could see the field and the garden.
There's weeds out there tall as the corn, and that corn ought to have already been cut. It's drying up.
Clyde and Buddy didn't take this place because they wanted to farm it. They took it to spite you.
After an hour, he still saw no sign that anyone was in or around the cabin.
I'll go see for sure. Nobody's looking for me.
Even if they was, they wouldn't know you. You don't look Indian anymore with your haircut.
Andy rode up to the cabin, circling at first, then entering. Shortly, he reappeared and waved.
Looks good.
Let's go.
As they approached the cabin, Andy looked back through the door and shook his head.
Rusty, you won't like what you see. It's a boar's nest in there.
All right, let's see what they've done to my place.
Rusty knew Tom Blessing had hauled away everything that could be moved so the Oldhams wouldn't get it. Someone had brought in a broken-back table and a couple of wooden boxes that evidently served in place of chairs. Two iron pots and a tin bucket sat on the cold hearth, smelling of spoiled meat, grease, and congealed beans. Coffee grounds had been spilled across the floor between the hearth and the table. Two tin plates held remnants of the last meal someone had eaten here. A piece of cornbread had molded almost to the color of gray ash.
Somebody's mother sure didn't teach them much.
Looks like the time I was gone to the Rangers and Fowler Gaskin moved in. Took lye soap and lots of water to get the stink out.
We can throw all this stuff away and at least sweep out a little.
You see a broom anywhere?
Should be. Huh.
Never mind. It'd just tell the Oldhams that somebody'd been here. They'd figure it was me.
He felt resentful, remembering how hard Mother Dora had worked to keep the cabin clean.
Let's shut the door behind us and leave things the way they are. I've got a visit to make.
There ain't nobody left to see.
Rusty did not answer him. He rode to the small rock-fenced plot that served as the Shannon family cemetery. Tanner and Andy waited. Stepping down from the saddle, Rusty handed the reins to Andy. He stopped before the stone markers and took off his hat. For a long time he stood, staring, remembering.
Rusty, there's a rider coming this way. We better be moving down to the timber.
Rusty tried to see him, but could not. Andy's eyes were sharper than his own. He hoped they were sharper than those of the oncoming horseman.
Daddy Mike, Mother Dora, they've stole this place from us for now. But I swear to you, We'll get it back.
From their place of concealment, Rusty and the others watched the horsemen ride up to the cabin and draw a bucket of water from the well. After a fast drink, he moved on.
That was Farley Brackett.
He's sure pushing on them bridle reins.
He's got reason. Look yonder.
Half a dozen horsemen followed along in Brackett's tracks.
Do they look like soldiers?
State police would be my guess. They're after Farley, and the Oldham brothers must be with them. I see a man with just one arm.
Rusty pulled the skin at the corners of his eyes to sharpen his vision.
That's Buddy, all right. And Clyde just behind him.
Sounds like Clyde. If there's to be any shooting, he'll be behind somebody.
He looked down at his rifle, but did not reach for it.
I believe I could pick off both of them from here. Nobody would ever know who done it.
No. Somebody else would take up the warrant they put out against me. And I need them alive if I'm ever going to get my farm back. Dead men don't sign deeds.
If Farley had any brains, he'd be halfway to California by now instead of wearing out posses around here. And that's what you ought to do, Rusty. Get away till Texas has a new government.
No telling how long that'll be.
They remained hidden in the timber by the river until dusk, then made their way back to Shanty's farm. The dog greeted them 200 yards from the cabin and barked at them the rest of the way in.
It's just us. We're coming in.
The rising moon revealed that the roof had been added during the day and partially shingled. Rusty felt a fleeting guilt for not having remained here to help with the work. Shanty emerged from the darkness of the log walls.
Y'all come on in. I'll stir up the fire and fix you something to eat.
We brought venison.
Rusty had decided to take a chance and shoot a deer so they would not burden Shanty's food supply. He eased the carcass down from Alamo's back.
Oh, quiet. You'll get your share by and by. Get!
They lay the deer on a crude bench set beside what would be the front door when the cabin was finished. He fetched a butcher knife and cut a generous portion of backstrap.
There you go, boy. Enjoy. You get a look at your farm?
Doesn't appear like anybody's done a lick of work. They're letting the crops go.
I know. And after all the sweat we put in plowing and planting, the Lord can't abide slothful ways. He'll sooner or later fix them Oldham boys.
But he generally needs some help. That's what I keep trying to tell Rusty.
If the Lord needs help, it'll come. He'll send out a call, and the right man will hear. He got mysterious ways.
Huh? Hello, the house!
Who's out yonder?
Farley Brackett. All right if I come in.
Come ahead. Ain't no police here.
Rusty knew Shanty wasn't particularly happy to let him in. Neither Farley nor his father had shown him any respect.
Whew. You got anything a starved out man could eat? Them state police been hounding me so bad I ain't ate since the day before yesterday.
There's still some venison.
Who in the hell?
Rusty Shannon. You don't need the gun.
I come mighty close to shooting you. Ain't good manners to walk up behind a man in the dark. Bad for the health, too.
We saw you stop for a drink of water at my place. Saw the posse that was after you.
They ain't really wanting to catch me and have an open fight. Especially Clyde Oldham. He wants to dry gulch me where I wouldn't have a chance.
Why don't you hightail it for Mexico, or maybe Arizona?
Been wanting to, but my pockets are empty. My old daddy has some getting away money waiting for me, but they keep a guard around his place so I doesn't try to go in. That's why I come to your place. I need a favor from you.
I don't see where Shanty owes you any favors. You tried once to run him off his place.
I have repented my ways.
What's the favor?
My old daddy works several fellas like you. I don't think the police would take much notice if another one was to show up there. My daddy could give you the money and you could fetch it here to me. I'd pay you for your trouble.
Your old daddy don't have no use for the likes of me. How come you think he'd trust me with his money?
I'd write a note for you to give him.
Shanty, the Oldhams know who you are and where to find you. If they caught on to what you were up to, they might damn well kill you. At least they'd see to it that you never got out of jail.
Shanty don't need to go. I will.
Why? Why you, Andy?
Anything to bedevil them Oldhams.
He rubbed the quirt mark on his face. It still burned at times.
They owe me.
That's fine. Just remember, my old daddy's bedroom is in the southwest corner. If you go in the wrong way, my mother or my sister are liable to holler.
It'd be just as risky for you as for Shanty. They'd grab you by the collar as soon as you showed up.
But I wouldn't show up. Not where they could see me. I sneaked into a Comanche teepee and got Billy out without waking anybody. I ought to be able to slip into the Brackett house without stirring up the police.
Rusty disapproved, but he soon saw he was going to lose the argument.
I'll ride with you then. I want to be close by in case you need help.
No, you stay here. All of you stay here. This is a job I'd best do by myself, the coyote way.
Andy could barely make out the house as a thin cloud stole most of the limited light from a quarter moon. Andy had stopped 100 yards out and tied the reins to a tree. He reasoned that the guards would have moved close to the house at dark. Before he put down his full weight, he tested each step for twigs that might crack or gravel that might slip underfoot. Shortly, he saw a flash of fire as someone lighted a cigarette. Good. He had that guard located. The cloud drifted on, uncovering the moon, though the light remained dim. Andy moved sideways to put more distance between him and the guard he had spotted.
Silas, you got any tobacco? I'm plumb out.
Yeah, but be careful when you light it. If the captain sees it, we'll all catch hell.
Reminds me of an officer I had in the army. Mad about something all the time. He sure got it in for them old ones.
With good reason. We almost had Farley Brackett, then Buddy charged in before we was ready and got his horse knocked out from under him. Damn, that Farley's a crack shot.
At least Buddy's better than Clyde. Never saw a man who could disappear so quick when he hears a gun go off.
Andy circled around them. He was almost to the back of the house. He worried over a dim patch of moonlight he had to cross before he could reach the porch. He worked along carefully in the shadow of a shed, looked hard in all directions, then passed quickly through the stretch of open ground. He stopped in the darkness of the porch, listening for any indication that someone had seen him. Nothing. The back door was open for ventilation, so he need not worry about noisy hinges. Inside the house, he found himself in a hallway that extended all the way to the open front door. He saw the dark outline of a guard sitting on the edge of the front porch. The guard didn't respond. Andy decided that nervousness exaggerated his own perception of the noise. Jeremiah Brackett slept in the southwest corner room, Farley had said. The doors to the other bedrooms opened into the hallway. Bethel and Elnora Brackett slept in those, he reasoned. He had no wish to awaken them. Startled, they might cry out and bring the guards running in. His eyes grew accustomed to the gloom. He could make out a bureau with a mirror on it and a pitcher and bowl. Brackett's bed was pulled up next to the deep window for fresh air.
Mr. Brackett, wake up. Shh! No noise, Mr. Brackett. There's a guard sitting on your front porch.
Who are you? If you're here to rob me, you've come to a poor place.
You remember me. I'm Mendy Pickard, from over at Rusty Shannon's.
The Indian boy? What do you want?
I've come on an errand for Farley. He says you've saved some getting away money for him.
How do I know you're doing this for Farley? How do I know you're not here to take the money and light out with it?
Here, got a letter from him to you. He was aiming to send Shanty, but I've come instead.
He unfolded the letter, but could not read it in the poor light. He reached toward a lamp.
I wouldn't light that. I'd cause the guards to come in and see what's going on.
Brackett tried holding the letter close to the window, but still could not read it.
I'll have to take your word. I reckon if you weren't honest, Shannon wouldn't have put up with you for so long.
He pulled a pair of trousers over his bare legs and half-buttoned them.
The money's in the parlor, hidden in the back of a drawer.
I hope you can get it without rousing up the guard on the porch.
Brackett's weight made the floor squeak more than it had under Andy. Andy stood in the hallway, his back to the wall beside the parlor door, and watched the guard. The slump of the man's shoulders indicated that he might be asleep, but Andy knew he couldn't count on that.
I got... Oh, damn!
Andy's heart leaped.
What was that?
The guard jumped to his feet, pistol in his hand. Mrs. Brackett came into the hallway, carrying a lighted lamp. Andy desperately signaled for her to blow it out, but it was too late. The guard stood in the front door, eyes wide. Andy recognized Buddy Oldham. Jeremiah came out of the parlor.
Damn! Clyde! It's Farley Brackett!
Andy realized that in his confusion, Buddy had mistaken the father for the son. Elnora Brackett fell and dropped the lamp. The oil spread on the floor and took fire.
We got him! Shoot! Shoot!
Bethel rushed from her bedroom.
Mother!
She ran to her mother, who was twisted on the floor. Jeremiah hobbled to the door, waving his arms.
Stop firing! Stop firing! You've hit my wife!
Andy lay flat on the floor and motioned for Bethel to do the same.
Quit firing! Farley Brackett's not here!
Hey! It's over with! We got two people shot in here!
The other guard trotted into the nearest bedroom and returned with a heavy quilt to spread over the flames from the lamp.
I'll get the fire!
Clyde Oldham entered the hallway, trembling with excitement.
We got him! We got him!
Buddy followed him in, pistol in his hand. It was still smoking.
You sorry son of a bitch! You shot Farley's mother and father! Farley ain't here! He never was!
But I saw him!
You saw Jeremiah and you killed him!
Hey, you're Rusty Shannon's Indian.
I'm nobody's Indian.
A policeman of severe countenance entered the house. He looked first at Jeremiah, then at Elnora. He gave Clyde Oldham a look of loathing.
All you did here was kill an old man and wound an old woman. I've had as much of your bungling as I can handle, Clyde. You're off the force.
You're firing me?
Damn right. And take your quick-trigger brother with you. I'll be at the courthouse in the morning to pay you off. And then I never want to see either one of you ever again.
But, Captain, I was certain.
Get before I take a notion to shoot you myself.
Mother?
Her eyelids fluttered open. She turned her head painfully and looked toward her husband.
Is he?
Yes, Mama. He's gone.
I'm sorry. I treated him badly. I wish...
Mother.
This was so damned unnecessary.
The captain cut his gaze to Andy.
Who are you? I don't remember ever seeing you before.
Name's Andy Pickard.
What were you doing here?
I was looking for a job. They asked me to spend the night.
You always sleep with your clothes on?
Yes, sir. Most of the time.
It'll take 40 years for this part of the country to become civilized.
He looked down at Bethel.
We'll see what we can do about your mother's wound, then carry her to town. Can you get one of your hands to hitch a team to your wagon?
I can do that.
All right. And about your father, you want to bury him here or in town?
Here. Here's where he belongs.
The captain turned to his men.
Well, don't just stand there. Pick that old man up from the floor. Carry him into that room yonder. Least we can do is lay him out like a Christian.
Andy followed Bethel into the room where the police had carried her mother. She studied Andy as if she were seeing him for the first time.
What were you doing here?
I'm on a mission from Farley. He's looking to leave the state. Your father was fetching some money for him out of the parlor. It's probably in his pocket.
I almost wish they would catch him. It was him and his wild ways that caused all this.
I heard the war turned him that away.
A lot of other men went to war without going outlaw. Anyway, it won't do any good to give him the money now. He won't leave until he's evened the score for this.
How many more state police has he got to shoot?
Two, at least. The Oldhams.
I dread going back and telling your brother what happened.
It's mostly his doing.
Andy saw a dark figure step up onto the porch and enter the hallway into the lamplight. It was Rusty. Andy met him halfway.
You oughtn't to be here. The police are all over the place.
I heard the shooting.
Andy beckoned Rusty into Elnora's room.
You followed me, didn't you?
I just said I wouldn't come with you. I didn't promise not to follow you. Wasn't no telling what trouble you might get into.
He looked with concern at the wounded woman.
What about her husband?
Buddy Oldham started the shooting. He saw the father and thought he was Farley. I hope Farley didn't come with you.
I convinced him to stay at Shanty's. Told him he might bring danger to his folks. But he did that without even being here.
The captain fired the Oldhams for doing this.
They deserved it.
Just the same, they've still got charges against you. Better get away from here before somebody recognizes you.
We'd better both get away from here.
Andy took Bethel's hand.
You going to be all right?
It'll be a long time before I'm all right. But if you're asking whether it's all right for you to go, the answer is yes. I've got good folks here to help me. And there'll be neighbors here in the morning.
I'm sorry about all this. It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't come.
But you came for Farley. It wasn't your fault. Wasn't anybody's fault but Farley's and the Oldhams.
I'll come back when I can and see if I can be any help.
I'd like that, Andy. You'll be welcome.
She clasped his hand tightly, then released it. Andy felt a glow unlike any he had known before.
We better go, Rusty.
Did you get Farley's money?
No. There wasn't a chance once the excitement started. He don't deserve it anyway.
I was hoping he'd take it and go west or down to Mexico. I'm afraid now he'll stay around for a chance at the Oldhams.
Maybe they'll kill one another and it'll all be over.
I've got a problem with that. Clyde Oldham took my farm in his name. He's the only one can sign it back over to me.
He won't ever do it.
He might, with my gun barrel stuck in his ear.
The coming sunrise was already lacing the skyline clouds with pink and purple when Andy and Rusty rode up to Shanty's place.
Good to know there's no sneaking up to Shanty's.
Nope. Old Ruff's a good dog.
Farley Brackett came out from beneath the shed where he had spent the night. Andy had known he was unlikely to sleep in the cabin under the same roof with Shanty. Farley held a pistol in his hand until he was certain no one had come with Andy and Rusty, and no one had followed.
Where's my money?
Andy felt like hitting him.
I didn't get it.
Did that damned old man refuse to give it to you?
That damned old man died trying to give it to me.
Died?
He got the money, but Buddy Oldham saw him, thought he was you, and started a gunfight. He got hit twice. Your mother once.
How bad is my mother hurt? What about my sister?
Your mother is probably on the way to town by now. Your sister wasn't hit.
Shanty had heard most of it. He stood silent, eyes sympathetic, for a man who had shown him only contempt. Farley turned his back, pulling himself together. When he turned again, his face was taut with anger and hatred.
What about them Oldhams? They still at our place?
The captain fired them. Told them he would pay them off in town.
Town? Whereabouts in town?
I don't know. Courthouse, I guess.
Andy.
I'll meet him there.
I wish you hadn't told him. Now he's on his way to kill the Oldhams.
Wouldn't make any difference whether I told him or not. He'd figure it out.
We've got to try and get to town ahead of him. Maybe we can find some way to stop this.
We might delay it. But I doubt we can stop it, short of killing him ourselves. Bethel said he won't leave her till he gets revenge on Clyde and Buddy. I expect she's right.
Shanty, see if you can keep Farley here a little longer. Offer him coffee, fix him breakfast, anything you can do.
I'll try, Mr. Rusty. But looks to me like he got the devil riding with him. Now you watch out he don't kill you if you get in his way.
Rusty spurred into a lope. Andy managed to bring Long Red up even.
He'll know what you're up to. He'll run that horse to death trying to beat us to town.
Andy had reason to fear they might run their own horses to death. Rusty kept pushing hard, frequently looking back over his shoulder. Andy looked back too, but could not see Farley.
Hadn't we better slow down a little? I can feel my horse giving out.
He can give out after we've done what we have to.
Andy understood Rusty's reason for wanting to keep Clyde Oldham alive, but he couldn't help thinking that the community would be better off without either the Oldhams or Farley Brackett. The courthouse was new, built of stone, with a cupola and a parapet. The old frame building had served well, but the local reconstruction government decided that its dignity demanded something better, no matter the cost. The taxpayers were mostly rebels anyway.
Maybe you better let me go talk to the Oldhams, if I can find them in there. Going by what they did last night, they may want to shoot you and then ask what you want.
No, I want to try and make a bargain with Clyde.
Andy shrugged and followed Rusty up the steps. Andy had never been inside the new courthouse. Once through the door, he had no idea where the state police office might be. But Rusty knew. He led off down a corridor, Andy on his heels. Andy remembered the captain from the night before. The officer looked up. He recognized Andy, but he didn't seem to know Rusty.
I'm looking for the Oldham brothers.
I released them from the service this morning. They are no responsibility of mine.
But where are they at?
Are you some kin of the Brackets?
No, I'm Rusty Shannon. But if I don't find the Oldhams pretty quick, they're fixing to meet up with a member of the Brackett family.
You mean Farley?
Yes. And if he gets to him first, Jeremiah won't be the only man needs burying.
The Oldhams were in a surly mood when they left here. I would guess they've gone to one of the liquor establishments around the square to soak their anger in whiskey. What's your interest in them?
Clyde Oldham owes me a farm.
I know about that. And you want him to remain alive until you get it back?
That'd be long enough.
Very well. I'll take the north side of the square, or you take the south. But stand clear if Farley Brackett shows up. He belongs to me.
I'll agree to that. Thank you, Captain. Captain Burmeister.
Private Shannon. Andy.
You're the new judge here? What happened to the other one?
He was a stealer. A little one only, but he did not share with the big stealers in Austin. He was fired. What brings you here?
Hoping to stop a killing. Maybe two of them. You remember the Oldham brothers.
But too well. Who are they about to kill?
More likely it'll be the other way around if we can't stop it.
Well, then go by all means. My docket is already full with murders. But when you're done, my office is here. Come visit sometime.
To Andy's recollection, two whiskey shops stood on the street due south of the courthouse. They would try one, then the other. He followed Rusty to the first one. A quick look around did not reveal the Oldhams. Rusty glanced anxiously up the street. Andy knew he was looking for Farley.
Let's try this other one.
He headed for another, which Andy knew by reputation. Its sign marked it as Lone Star Grocery, with smaller letters proclaiming that it dealt in the finest of tobacco and spirituous liquors, and a billiard table from St. Louis. It was known as a hangout for off-duty state police and others of Union leanings. Most old Confederates avoided it. Buddy Oldham sat at a table, a full glass and a half-empty bottle in front of him. Clyde Oldham stood with his back turned.
And another thing. The old man was a diehard rebel anyway. Who's to say he didn't break the law dozens of times? Ought to have been killed years ago. Him and Farley, too. Clyde.
Yeah?
Clyde, look who just came in.
Clyde turned. He froze a moment, then placed a hand on his pistol.
Rusty Shannon, you are under arrest.
You've got no authority to arrest anybody. But if you want to try, there's a lot bigger game than me out yonder looking for you.
Yeah? And who'd that be?
The startled expression in Clyde's face indicated that he already guessed.
Farley Brackett?
He's on his way. May already be here. I'd advise you boys to go out the back door and not let your shirt tails touch you till you're in the next county. Maybe two counties over.
How come you telling us?
Because I want to keep you alive. At least till you sign my farm back to me.
Oh, that'll be a cold day in hell. Come on, buddy, let's go.
No.
No?
I ain't scared of Farley Brackett. I almost got him a couple of times. Get him now and maybe they'll take us back into the police. Even if they don't, there's a reward on him.
I never seen a dead man collect a reward. Come on, buddy, let's go while we can.
No. I'm taking Farley Brackett.
Clyde faced the men in the saloon.
Come on, you men. Buddy don't stand a chance. You gotta help him.
Nobody seemed much inclined to move.
He's your brother. You stop him.
Clyde's hands shook as he surveyed the men in the room, some of them state police.
If we work together, we can get Brackett this time. We'll split the reward. Even money for everybody.
Nobody moved.
Ah, you're a bunch of cowards.
Ain't you going to stop them?
It's gone out of our hands. The only thing that'll stop Buddy now is a bullet.
Buddy stood in the center of the street, pistol in hand, waiting. Farley was riding toward him. Other men, sensing what was building, hurried out of the way.
Farley Brackett! You are under arrest in the name of the law! Stop! Well, you damned idiot! No!
Farley strode past Buddy and bore down on Clyde. All the fight seemed to go right out of Clyde. The hand that held the pistol shook uncontrollably. He tried to raise the weapon, but he couldn't lift it. It was as if it weighed 100 pounds.
No! No, please! Oh, for God's sake, don't kill me!
You wounded my mother. You killed my old daddy. Now pick up that pistol and die like a man.
Oh, God! No! Shannon, help me! Don't let him do it!
Andy didn't know whether to pity the man or walk over and spit on him. He looked at Rusty, seeking his reaction.
Farley, you've killed Buddy. One ought to be enough. I need Clyde alive.
Nope. I need him dead. Worse than you need him alive.
Rusty stepped between the two men.
I said one is enough. You'd better get on your horse and ride. There's a bunch of state police coming around the courthouse.
They're over there! Come on, man!
Damn! All right, Shannon. But whatever you need him for, you better take care of it quick. Because I'll be back.
He ran to his horse. He spurred out between two buildings and was gone.
Yeah.
Rusty reached down and took hold of Clyde's collar.
Get up from there. You're going over to the courthouse with me and sign some papers.
I ain't signing nothing.
Oh, you will. I know where Farley's going. Mess with me, and I'll take you to him.
Andy knew that was a bluff, but he kept a straight face. Rusty, too, could play the trickster.
You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't turn over a man to somebody like Farley.
I will if you don't dot every I and cross every T just like Judge Burmeister tells you.
It took about an hour for the judge to write out the deed and for all parties to sign it. Clyde's signature was shaky, but legal.
Judge, after I get the place cleaned up, I'd like you to come out and see it. We'll barbecue a hog.
That would make me glad, Private Shannon. Glad indeed.
Rusty and Andy escorted Clyde to his horse. Clyde was still in shock, his gaze roaming up and down the street as if he expected Farley Brackett to come charging back any minute.
What are we going to do about Buddy?
The county will take care of the burying. If I was you, I'd leave before Farley shows up again and buries you. I wouldn't stop running till I got to Louisiana. Maybe even Mississippi.
Yeah!
I hope we've seen the last of him. And Farley, too.
You never know.
Up the street, a wagon arrived, driven by a black farmhand. Bethel Brackett sat beside him. Rusty watched them.
Looks like they're headed for the doctors. I expect they've got Mrs. Brackett in the wagon.
That's the way I figure it.
That Bethel's a nice-looking girl, but a little light in weight. Maybe you'd better go see if you can be any help to her.
I think I'll do that. I'll see you around, Rusty.
You too, Andy.
Rusty held the deed tightly in his hand. Watching Andy follow after the wagon, he was reminded of Josie Monahan. Soon as he caught up doing what was needful around the farm, he would write Josie a letter. He might even take it to her himself. Epilogue. By the December election of 1873, the disenfranchised Confederate veterans had regained the right to vote. 2-1, they chose Richard Koch over the longtime Reconstruction Governor Edmund J. Davis, a basically honest man who had been given too much power for his own good or the good of the people of Texas. Davis, for a time, rejected the results and maintained that the election was unconstitutional. As the inauguration date approached in January 1874, Davis held out, refusing to relinquish his office. For several days, armed groups from both sides jockeyed for position in and around the state capitol, threatening but never quite coming to violence. Barricaded in the Capitol building, Davis twice telegraphed President Ulysses S. Grant, begging for a military force to keep him in office. Grant refused, advising him to give up the struggle. Davis did, finally, and a new era dawned in Texas. A new constitution was written, guaranteeing that no governor ever again would have dictatorial powers. The Texas Rangers were reorganized, more efficient, and stronger than ever before. Texas Rangers, The Way of the Coyote is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2001, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Elizabeth Demery, Eric Messner, Michael John Casey, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Drew Kopus, Richard Rowan, Jonathan Watkins, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, James Konacek, Bobby Aselford, Lily Beacon, Nanette Savard, Andy Clements, Ren Casey, Yasmin Toison, Catherine Aselford, Tim Getman, Casey Platt, Christopher Graybill, Peter Stray, M.B. Van Dorn, James Lewis, Tim Carlin, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dan Smith. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Texas Rangers, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's series, Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man and The Last Gunfighter. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in graphic audio. In the survivalist's world, rest is nothing more than a dying star in the black hole of war.
Paul!
No good, John!
They are crashing!
Get on!
My men! I must...
They're dead! Damn it, Vasily! Help me!
Maria, get the weapon! Paul, you and Michael, get the fuselage door open and stand back! Flames!
Whatever we're doing, do it now!
Everybody, now, follow me and jump, and God help us! Michael! Paul! Maria! For Capio!
Do you like Maria?
You want to talk about her now?
It's not as if we get a lot of downtime together.
Well, she's pretty, she's smart, obviously nuts about you.
You didn't answer my question.
What are you asking me? Is it all right because of what happened to Madison and the baby?
Do you stay where the other scientist stays, Svetlana?
I have a room there, of course. But I find my apartment in the city more conducive to thought.
I would like to see it very much. Might I do that? See it?
Yes, Comrade Marshall.
Nikolai, Svetlana. Nikolai. I don't suppose you are the sort of man who would choose suicide. No, death before dishonor certainly, but not suicide in a situation such as this.
That is correct, Comrade Marshall.
And what will you say at your trial, Vasily?
Comrade Marshall?
When you are asked why you, a major of the elite corps, its commander, why you allowed this wanted war criminal to go free, along with several other war criminals, why did you?
Comrade Marshall. His son saved my life. I met Dr. Rourke. He is a man of consummate bravery. He could not be the evil person he has been painted to be. I spoke with him. I fought beside him. He perhaps...
Hero Marshal, a courageous, honorable, and always truthful Vladimir Karamazov lied? See how far you get saying such a thing at a trial.
But...
The bridge is secure, and so are the torpedo rooms. Time's on our side now.
The ship is ours!
Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist, number 18, The Struggle. Available now in graphic audio.
This blood brothering between you, Prince Midas, and you, Chieftain Brunhilde, will be the first in over a decade. You are not to harm the Shaggoth in no way, not even at the cost of your own life. Not that you could bring harm to the great beast anyway. Not even if you brought fine weapons in there with you. This is a test of your courage, not your warrior skills, and a test of your trust in each other. If either of you fails, then you both will surely die and horribly. Are you prepared to begin?
What are you about, Elf? Are you going to tell me or not?
You take care, Bradwarden. On the South Road, I heard rumors of the Rosy Plague.
Oh, by the demons, you say?
I know not if there's any truth to those words. More likely, they were the utterances of a gossiping fool and nothing more. But I can ill afford to take the chance, any chance, of bringing the plague back to my people. Know that if the land becomes ill with plague, the Tuelalfar will secure our borders, and none will leave for many years. Farewell.
It is the plague! It is confirmed, my king! The Rosy Plague! What are we to do?
What can we do? Lock our doors fast and tight.
Oh, but where are you then? You've not been out of your walls in days! In weeks! Are you just to sit in there and let us all die then? Are you just to stand on your walls and shoot us dead if we come too close? And you're calling yourself the Folk of God? But you're just a pack of scared dogs, yar!
Join with us before all the world has fallen into darkness. Help us put the church aright and thus end the misery of the plague.
You believe the plague to be a punishment from God?
On those who have forsaken the truth.
Absurd.
Obvious. I see it, and they see it. We know the truth, and we know the source, and no edicts from Father Abbot Agrangere will sway us from that path.
You risk the wrath of Father Abbot Agrangere and all the masters of St. Mirabel.
And you, Brother Glendonhawk, risk the wrath of Marcalo de Unaro. Which of us, then, do you believe in the worst situation?
You have gone mad.
As much has been said of many prophets. If you try to stop us, you may prove victorious, but I warn you that I will come for your throat first and foremost.
Experience the latest chapter of the Demon Wars saga in graphic audio. Don't miss Mortalis Part 2. Available now.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.